The Israelites rose early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought sacrifices of well-being. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to revel. Exodus chapter 32, verse 6. Hey everybody, I'm Chris Dowd.
And I'm Reagan Gilliland.
And this is Off Script, the podcast where every week we take a deeper dive on last Sunday's sermon, talk about the theology behind it, and get a chance to discuss anything that didn't make it in, that ended up on the cutting room floor. We're excited to get started today. We are starting Stewardship. Woohoo!
Yeah, so our Stewardship series is Love, Serve, Transform. And so let's go ahead and get started. What was your focus statement for this week's message, and why did you choose it in the direction of your message?
Yes, this is an excellent question. Let's see. My focus statement is, as we kick off our 2021 stewardship campaign, we remind ourselves of our greatest temptation, putting idols before God. Our mission statement, loving God, reminds us of our first responsibility.
That's good. All right, so stewardship. Let's talk about that word for a second. So it's a topic that a lot of people kind of squirm or roll their eyes. And why do you think that is, Chris?
There's an old phrase that you've probably heard. I don't think I really heard it until I served more rural churches.
Okay.
But whenever a preacher says something that makes the congregation uncomfortable, the phrase is, now you're getting a meddling.
Okay.
You've heard that, right? Uh-huh. I never heard it at Arapaho. It was funny. But when went to Henrietta, and it probably was stewardship, was the first time somebody jokingly said, mm-hmm. now you're getting a meddling. And I think it's because, money is a pretty personal subject. And I'm not sure we're entirely healthy in the way we talk about money, honestly. Everybody's, what you make is a big secret, typically, right? Closely held. And we don't ever talk about that. We don't ever talk about that. Lots of families don't talk about what they give to the church with their kids, like growing up. You know what I mean? Yeah. Some do. But it's just not a subject that people typically discuss. And it's also pretty personal. Mm-hmm. And so when the subject comes up from the pulpit, it can make people uncomfortable. And what's interesting about that, I mean, I think there's a perception among some, and I've read this critique online. Nobody's ever said this to me personally. I mean, I'm not sure that I've ever heard church people in churches I've served talk about it in this way, but I've seen it online and kind of in general commentaries that churches talking about money is somehow self-serving.
Okay.
Right. Because there's a sense in which, like from the outside looking in, from a secular perspective, you're fundraising to raise the budget. But in fact, that's not at all what stewardship is all about. And I frequently will say that stewardship is in fact not at all about the church budget. And how much people give should not in any way be connected to the church budget. I mean, they're correlated, but they're not, like, correlation is not causation. Mm-hmm. It's an old theological, like systematic theology, like maxim. People should give based on their understanding of their relationship with Christ, right? I mean, the biblical expectation is the tithe. We can talk more about that. Probably should.
Yeah.
We're all called to either tithe or be working towards it. And so what we give really should be vein or ethos. And then if we do that, if everybody does that, the church budget takes care of itself. Mm-hmm. And it's, Jesus talked about money a lot. The only thing he talked about more was the kingdom. And so, you know, if he's talking about it, we can't really avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is curious how people are like, oh, we churches just talk about money all the time. And you're like, well, it's talked about a lot in the Bible.
Right. And I would probably fact check that claim too. I mean, the terrible stereotype of the televangelist who says the Holy Spirit wants you to give $1,000 so I can have a jet. That's what the Holy Spirit wants me to do.
I'm working towards that. I don't know how you are.
I drive a Kia. I'm very content with my Kia. I don't need a Gulfstream. But that, you know, people get in pop culture, people get that very negative view of the relationship between money and church and church leadership. That's obviously not the case in any churches most of our people would ever belong to. But that general negativity can sometimes seep into the conversation, which is unfortunate.
I always felt like anytime I would invite someone to join me in church, like college, usually, like, it somehow I'd always invite them on a day, like, where maybe there was a specific ask for money. You're like, dang it. So I think people are scared. I'm like, what if I invite them and you guys talk about money? Or what if I invite them and you talk, you know, like, I think there's that worry. But
well, listen, the only thing worse than a stewardship campaign is a capital campaign, because that's over and above giving.
Yes.
And that's the worst time to invite your your friends.
Please don't invite your friends
to the big sacrificial giving ask.
Please don't do that.
Speaking of sacrifice, we're talking about the golden calf today.
Right. Okay. So your message was called Loving God, which is the first point in our, you know, our mission statement. But do you think you would have picked, you know, ultimately that topic anyhow, even if we weren't using our mission statement as our focus?
Like in stewardship, like, so stewardship campaign, we're not going to go with the mission statement. Would I start somewhere else? You know, I think the two logical places to start when you talk about giving are either in gratitude, which we talked about last week, or the first commandment, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And I think, I do think loving God is the logical place to start, really, for any conversation about our responsibility as disciples. I mean, ultimately, there's a book by a theologian named Randy Maddox you may have read called Responsible Grace. Like, we respond to God's grace. Everything that we do is in response to God's grace. God starts it, you know, and then we respond to it through the way we live our lives. So I do think that's the right place to ground it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to do kind of a series about the whole theological concept of stewardship, generally speaking. I mean, if it's going to be a one Sunday sermon on giving, I might start somewhere else, maybe in the membership vows, although I'm not sure that's all that compelling, but I mean, it's in there. And you could always do something like, I alluded to the scripture in the sermon, from the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So that's kind of about what Mike Slaughter calls the heart check, you know, that book we referenced in the sermon, Shiny Gods. So I think it's a logical place to start. Lots of pastors don't like stewardship season because it feels like you're, well, you're going to make people uncomfortable when you're talking about it. I actually love stewardship season because it's, to me, it's not at all about fundraising. It's about an important part of our discipleship. The fundraising is a byproduct. That's a necessary byproduct for kind of the way the world works, like the functioning of, certainly a church our size. But it really is an essential part of our discipleship, right? We pray, we go to church, we serve, we give. I mean, there's a, this core group of practices that we're all called to. And there's, frankly, a shocking number of people who don't take giving seriously. And so that's an opportunity for us as pastors to be direct and honest about an important thing that a lot of people don't do. Like, if you were to, rank participation among all of the spiritual practices, I'm sure this is the one that would lag the most. Right? I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, for sure. Because, I mean, it's the heart. I mean, it's the heart.
Fasting hardest. Might be lower.
Yeah, fasting people. I don't like to fast. So there's
But that's about it.
I mean, I'll fast from different things, but fasting from food, I'm like, I don't know.
Fasting light, you know, like the Protestant version of giving up something for Lent, which is kind of a fast. I mean, maybe people do that.
But no, giving is like money. I mean, it's got a strong hold on us.
Yeah, say more about that. That is exactly the way to put it. What do you mean by that?
I think power or money has more power and influence on us probably more than anything, honestly.
Yeah, in what sense?
I mean, it just dictates so much of what we do. And I mean, also, I mean, you think about how much money, finance is a biggest, the biggest stressor for most people. Yeah, we don't want to give it up. We're scared to lose it. We're, I don't know. I mean, it's something that I think about constantly.
Yeah. That is the definition of an idol.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, people think of idolatry as worshiping this false thing. Mm-hmm. And that is one sense of it. But the much more insidious thing is, the much more insidious definition is an idol, something we give priority to in our lives over God.
Yeah.
And money absolutely is, it's got to be the number one vice.
Yeah.
And idol in our lives. Has to be.
Because, I mean, all of us say, well, I can't afford to do that. But if you were to look at my Amazon shopping history, right, you would think, really, you don't have money to give? It looks like, did you need that?
Right. Right. Yeah. Because we also have there's a huge confusion in our lives over the distinction between needs and wants.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are reasons that people don't like talking about money.
Yeah.
Because we all know it's true. Just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. This is kind of, I mean, it's on the same subject, but one of my favorite SNL skits, this was from several years ago, and it was about credit cards.
Mm.
I think Amy Poehler was in it. I think, I want to say like Steve Martin was in it. And it was like a guy explaining, you know, you don't buy things unless you have the money for it. And they're like, but what if I really want it? And then he's like, no. Okay, so if I get the money, then I should just buy it. Or, like, it was so clever because the people couldn't understand, like, but what if I'm really good?
Right.
Can I still get it?
Right.
And he's like, if you don't have the money, you don't get it.
Right.
Like, I don't know. It's just funny thing about money.
Well, and that reminds me of, like, Financial Peace University.
Yeah.
So Dave Ramsey, there's plenty to say positively and negatively, I think, about Dave's approach, but I appreciate his directness.
Mm-hmm.
and he's as direct as that. If you don't have the money, you don't get this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he incorporates, obviously, generosity is an important part of a meaningful, fulfilled life. There was the lay leader in Henrietta is a man named Howard Reiki. Dear, dear man. And he, when it came around to stewardship, he always wanted me, and he made a great point. You know, the United Methodist membership vows are, will you support and uphold this congregation of the United Methodist Church with your prayers, your presence, your gifts, your service, and your witness?
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to change that word gifts, because people can spiritualize that. And they can say, well, I don't have money to give, but I'll give my time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, that's not what we mean. Will you support and uphold this congregation of the United Methodist Church with your prayers, your presence, your giving, your service and your witness?
Yeah.
He said, because money is, that's part of it. That's just part of the deal. It was part of the deal for Jesus. It's been part of the deal for disciples since, I mean, Abraham wouldn't call himself a disciple. That's a Christian word.
Yeah.
But followers of Christ, God's people, since Abraham, literally, the first one, the first one called, was expected to give. So I really like the subject, actually.
No, it is good. You know, eventually we'll get to the questions I actually did, but, weren't there like knights when they were baptized, they would hold their sword above the water? Have you heard this story?
No.
I don't know the exact. So a bunch of knights or soldiers would be baptized, but they would keep their swords above the water so they wouldn't have to give up killing people.
Really?
And so Stan Copeland at Lover's Lane would always talk about how like many of us get baptized, but we take our wallet out of our... And we keep our wallet above the water, so we don't.
That's a good image.
Have to be changed.
Huh?
Yeah, that's always stuck with me.
Huh? That's memorable.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
Okay.
You can totally steal that from Stan.
I could.
You're preaching next week. You're talking about.
Yeah, but I have this really phenomenal story that I thought of myself.
All right,
okay. Okay. So, we are talking about the golden calf. Were there any other stories you thought about using, or why do you? Obviously, it's pretty obvious why this story makes sense, but. Talk about it, I guess.
It's funny. I went back. So I've got this thing on my desk. It's called a pastoral record. And you write down baptisms, confirmations, weddings, funerals, appointments. That's a churchy word for us Methodist preachers. And then sermons. And I went back and looked. So this is the lectionary text for this past Sunday.
Okay.
The Old Testament lectionary text. Every time it's come up in the lectionary, I've preached on it. And I don't do that with very many texts except for like Christmas and Easter.
Yeah.
I think it's just really foundational. I just think it's a great, first of all, everyone knows something about the story, right? It's not something, it's not an obscure Bible text that you got to spend, you know, a third of the sermon unpacking. Everybody right. knows, even people who don't know anything about the Bible have some kind of passing knowledge of this story.
Yeah.
And even the very rare person who doesn't can get it. Mm-hmm. and you can do a whole Bible story on the 32nd chapter of Exodus. We stopped in the 14th verse because that's what the lectionary does, which I'm appreciative of, because the end of that chapter gets really violent.
Okay.
Like Moses ends up killing a bunch of people because he's mad at him. But what I love about these first 14 verses is that Aaron, who's, you know, I mean, he's Moses' brother and his right-hand man and his, I just got a Hamilton.
I know, it's like, here we go, here goes Hamilton.
Get my right-hand man back. he's kind of ambivalent about the whole thing. Like the people say, make for us an idol. And he doesn't even argue with them. He's like, all right.
He's like, oh, that's good.
Give me your gold. If we can do that. We can make that happen. But then after they've made the golden calf, he still specifically uses the word, now we're going to have a festival to the Lord. Not to the calf.
Yeah.
So he, you know, it's unclear from the text whether or not, whether the people are considering this calf to be a representation of God, like God, mm-hmm. the God, mm-hmm. or if they are understanding it to be a different God. It's unclear from the text.
Yeah.
What's clear is that they're not supposed to be doing it. Right. And that they are placing their, like they are antsy is the word that I use in the sermon. They're insecure because Moses is up talking to God and he's gone for a while. And they're, you know, in the middle of the desert, like who knows if the Egyptians are still on their heels, and they get scared and their fear leads them to put their trust in something that they shouldn't. That is the perfect metaphor for the way we talk about money, well, the way we deal with money, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lack of generosity is often fear-based. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have enough money for XYZ.
Yeah.
I need this money for a bigger house. I need to put this money away for the kids' college. I need to put this money away for retirement, or I'm not going to have enough. And and clearly we've got to make plans for our kids' education and for retirement and everything else. But a way to think about this is we often come from a place of scarcity. Like we don't come from a place of abundance. We don't trust that there's going to be enough. And so we hoard, mm-hmm. And we need more. And in the case of the Israelites, they didn't trust that God was going to provide because God was not visible. Moses was away. They get scared and they put the focus of their energy and faith ultimately in something that God had said, don't do that.
Yeah. So remind people, this story happens after the Ten Commandments or before the mm-hmm. Ten Commandments? Just so.
It's after the law is given.
Yeah.
So it's after the Ten Commandments and the other 620 or whatever.
There's 613, I think, total,
613?
Right? Yeah.
So it's 10 plus 603.
Yeah.
And not only has God given them the entire law, they have ratified it and said, oh, yeah, we're in. No problem, God. We totally accept all this. Yay, yeah. God, we love you. And then Moses says, okay, I'll be back. And he's up there 40 days and 40 nights. It's not clear when they're, like, we don't know if it's the next day when they're like, oh, wait a minute, or if it's on day 39.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, so it's after God has given the law. It's after God has delivered them from Pharaoh.
Yeah.
It's after God's killed Pharaoh's army. It's after God's provided food and water in the desert. God's bona fides have been on display.
Yeah.
Like God's like, okay, I got this. There's no need to doubt. And yet they still do.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It's not like not worshiping other things was buried in the 613.
Number one and number two.
Number two.
Right.
Right up
now,
front.
Maybe they forgot it by the time they got to 613.
Maybe.
I think it'd be hard to miss.
Yeah, a little bit. I do love that in your sermon you say that the Israelites got antsy. That was really polite. But you kind of already covered this, but we do the same. We get fearful, and you kind of named all of that we just it's a control thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to take things in our own hands and we doubt. Mm-hmm. There's not enough trust. And so we're like, okay, well, I just got to do something. Mm-hmm. And so we often make a mess rather than sitting and waiting, listening, mm-hmm. trust, all of that. Okay, so.
And let me just say,
yeah.
we all do this.
Yes.
This is not something pastors are immune to.
Right.
There are times when when we always do this time of year where we do the budget for the coming year and we've got to, you know, decide how much we're going to save in our medical savings account and how much we're putting the 529s. I mean, we've got all the same problems everybody else does. And there are times when I look at the amount that we give to the church and think, ugh, take that amount. Mm-hmm. I can do math.
Yeah.
And, you know, and invest that for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I could probably give twice that easily. At the end of the 20 years.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the rationalization I do. Yeah. In my head. This is something that every human being, in my opinion, struggles with. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is why the reason I referenced Mike Slaughter's book, Shiny Gods, is because, you know, Slaughter, he walks the walk. I mean, he's a very generous person. He did incredible work at Gaithersburg. He works for Horizons now, it's a stewardship company, in retirement. But that's a very accessible book and a very easy to understand book. And it's a great study for people who want to do a study with their small group or whatever. But this idea of a heart check where, okay, just look at your calendar and look at your budget and see how big a priority you're making God. We have to do that. We just have to do that because otherwise we can rationalize all these other ways to spend our talents, time, and money. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about kind of talents and time next week in the serving others or loving God, serving others. Sermon. So anyway, that is, it's something we all struggle with.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you say in your sermon, adultery is worshiping or prioritizing or placing our faith in something other than God. So what do you think we idolize most in 2020? And either as Texans, as Christians, as Americans, is it the same? Is it different? What do you think? Obviously, Texans worship their own state, which that's a big issue.
Well, I don't get to meddling.
don't get to meddling. But yeah, what do you think in general in 2020?
I think it's probably the same litany in every place and time. I think it's money. I think it's power, control. Mm-hmm. It shows up in different ways, but I think the fundamental issues are those. And I think, I personally think nobody's immune. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think? About Kansans. Or well, Missourians, or okay,
whatever.
Nebraskans?
Whatever.
Up there. Those rectangle states. Is it corn?
No, it's wheat in Kansas. Okay. Golly. Corn's like Iowa or something. Well, yeah, I mean, we idolize money and power. I think we do probably idolize certain people. I'm going to say, I think we idolize sometimes our political parties. Mm. We have a lot of allegiance and I think that can be scary. Mm-hmm. I think when we idolize, we focus in on so much and we don't dig deeper, kind of zoom out and see like, okay, am I giving too much power, too much attention? Am I giving too much to this? Mm-hmm. So just in general, I think we have to be careful about that. So
I totally agree. I totally agree. It's easy to make our Christian walk kind of a Sunday thing, mm-hmm. Sunday morning thing, maybe a 5 minute in the morning thing. And, that's problematic spiritually. Yeah, it was problematic for the Israelites mm-hmm. way back when.
Yep.
It was problematic for the early Christians. Jesus spent a lot of his ministry talking about the things that we put before God that we need to not. And I think it's been an ongoing struggle for 2,000 years, almost 2,000 years of Christian history. I just think this is When we talk about kind of the problem of sin, this is often the way it shows up.
Yeah.
And the golden calf story is helpful because it takes an obvious external object that you can draw the metaphorical and spiritual conclusions from. None of us are making a golden calf and worshiping it. I mean, no one does that. All of us have things that we struggle with. Mm-hmm. Putting above God.
Yeah. So, and I would say another thing we idolize, we can idolize our partners, our spouses, and mm-hmm. our kids,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now you're really getting the meddling, though.
I know. Or your dog, you know, whatever. Like, I mean, it's...
I'm glad you said dog and not cat.
I know.
But yeah.
Well, like, why would you idolize a cat? Come on now. Shots fired. Half the staff is not going to like me now.
Now you're super getting the meddling.
I know.
Man, taking shots at Texas, taking shots at cat lovers.
I know. I'm rude. I did that like my first like sermon in Table of Grace. I think I was hard on cats. It's fine.
Did they invite you back?
They did. Well, maybe I had no choice. So
I guess, yeah, we invited you back there.
Yeah, you invited me back. Okay. So you share about a time when you had your heart checked, and you might talk about that a little bit, what that meant, was spending more money at Starbucks than giving to the church.
Yeah.
Well, it's easy to do when they're like $6 drinks
right,
now.
Yeah. So my favorite drink, the most extravagant drink that I have is a quad venti soy no whip mocha.
Oh man, you're one of those.
Yeah. That is like an $8 drink.
Uh-huh.
So I only ever get those now when I have a reward, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the point. Like it's easy to drop. If you're going, like when I was in seminary, if I was on campus 4 days a week, I'd mm-hmm. probably go to Starbucks 4 days a week. So you do the math. That's a fair amount of money.
You didn't want to just drink the coffee in the refrigerator?
Come on now. That's nasty. That's not it. Look, I'm a coffee snob. Brown water does not cut it for me.
No. Oh, it was so bad. But you get desperate sometimes in seminary. You're like, I need something, but oh, I can like still kind of like taste it. Ooh, so bad.
We do have good coffee here at the church, by the way.
We do. Yeah. That is good. So what about other times that you've had kind of your heart checked where you've kind of looked and like, oh my gosh, I'm not living how I want or I should.
Mm-hmm. You know, these days, so on the money front, Whit and I worked through that early on in our marriage. And certainly by the time we were on staff and by the time I was commissioned and ordained, I mean, I really do believe it's, you have to lead by example. So yeah. I would never ask somebody to do something we're not doing, but it took a while, mm-hmm. Because I left a corporate job where I was making, I can't say, cause we're secret about that, you know, a good amount of money to become and then I became a youth minister, which
they pay a lot of money.
It's more about the benefits of hanging out with teenagers.
When Scott and I got married and we wrote our own vows and I said something about I love you when we're poor and more poor, I think was what I said.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, funny. This is a funny story. So, back before I heard a call to ordained ministry, I was kind of doing an exploration of what I wanted to do with my life. Whit and I both worked as consultants and then I worked for a client, Blockbuster. I went to work for that client after that project was ended. Good corporate job, kind of an engineering job, but I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do forever. And so there was a time when if you had asked me really through all of my 20s and my early 30s, if you had asked me what my ideal job was, I would have said teacher and coach. And it's funny because we were concerned about like raising a family on a teacher salary. Mm-hmm. And so then instead, my first job after my corporate job was as a 3/4 time youth minister.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Whitney was working at the Container Store as an engineer.
Yeah.
But, you know, once then we moved to Henrietta, we got appointed to Henrietta and she had to leave her job. And then we were living on my salary as a pastor of a smaller church in a county seat town. And that was more of a gut check than a heart check.
Yeah.
You know, we had to readjust a lot of things and then it all sorted out from there. So the money thing we've worked through, and then we did a capital campaign in Sherman, and that's kind of over and above tithing, which was all incredibly meaningful. I wouldn't change any of that. These days, the heart check moments are more when, like I react to something at work that just makes me madder than it should.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize, oh gosh, I haven't done my morning meditation in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
That's how it shows up these days.
Yeah.
And the answer is always the same. It is always to go back to the practices that I know sustain me, whether that's prayer, meditation, scripture reading, giving is on that list.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's how it shows up. How about you? You've had heart check moments?
Probably when I'm really frustrated at Andy, mm-hmm. my 4.5-year-old, mm-hmm. and I'm like, first of all, I'm like, she's 4.5.
And plus, she's super adorable.
She's super adorable.
How can you get irritated with that little girl?
She really doesn't do anything. It's me. It's all me. And I realized, oh gosh, like I'm not being a good example. I get your kids really will convict you. And you're like,
no doubt.
I'm reacting in a way that I tell them not to,
right.
not to be this right. way. So that's probably the biggest areas I think, oh gosh, I'm not. And then, like, sometimes I'll ask her to pray for me when I'm having those bad moments. Mm. And she's so good at praying. Like, she's incredible. And she'll be like, dear God, help my mommy have patience. And she is so sorry. Like, she's just so sweet.
Wow.
Yeah. She's incredible. She's an incredible kid.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a double PK.
She's a double PK.
Yeah. What's PK?
Pastor's kid.
Yeah. So she's...
I mean, she's good right now. We're probably doomed later on. Let's be real. Both of our kids.
It'll be a roller coaster like every, like every kid, but...
Yeah, double. Oh, sorry. Okay. Okay, at the beginning, you say this. I really like this. You say this at the beginning of your sermon. With regard to our relationship with our church home, then, stewardship is a theological concept that asks us how carefully and responsibly we're managing our personal gifts of talents, time, and money in support of our community of faith. In your opinion, where are people not using their gifts of talents, time, and money?
So I would probably just reframe my response to that. Like,
okay.
I think that everybody has to decide for themselves how they're going to use what God has entrusted to them in support of their community of faith. And that's something that only every individual disciple can discern. There are times in our lives when we have more time, talent, and money to share. And there are times in our lives when we've got to be more focused on our family or whatever, you know, our career. I mean, like,
yeah.
Life comes at us in waves. And so it's never my job, as I understand it, to tell people what they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
What I know is that if we're all, you know, I'm not sure how many active households we have in our church. We have 5,000 members. I know that if everybody is intentional about this process, if everybody is like deeply and spiritually and prayerfully thinking through the careful and responsible management of what God has entrusted to them, if everybody is serious about growing in generosity, like all of us are called to do, then everything else works itself out.
Mm-hmm.
I just entirely believe that. Somebody who's just lost their job because of the pandemic and is trying to deal with all the bills of a family, the amount they can give might be zero.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of time they can invest in the church might be minimal as they're trying to reset things. Most of us are not in that crisis moment,
mm-hmm.
and most of us should be doing certain things. Showing up for Sunday. You know, Adam Hamilton at Church of Resurrection is all about high expectation mm-hmm. discipleship, and I think he's exactly right. So I think all of us should be in church on Sunday. Now there's no excuse not to be, because we just turn our computer on or our TV, right?
Yeah.
And I think all of us should be part of a Sunday school or a small group growing in our faith. I think all of us should in some way serve, whether that's through children's ministry, youth ministry, some committee work, periodic projects. I mean, service at some point throughout the year needs to be on that list. And all of us should be intentionally giving with the goal of tithing. And tithing means 10%.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm asked, does that mean after tax or pre-tax? And my answer to that is, I'll put it this way. If you're a Dave Ramsey person, he's very clearly a after-tax giving. Like, mm-hmm. you can't give what you don't have.
Right.
And I've had several church members who are very generous say, yeah, but if I make $100,000 and I bring home $70,000, I can't give $10,000. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Anybody who's seriously thinking about it like that is not necessarily the target audience for the you should be giving message, right? I mean, if you're that intentional about it, it's not a magic formula. There's a great story in Acts about Ananias and Sapphira. You know this story?
I don't. Remind me.
So they sell a field and they only give part of it to the disciples. And Peter, I think it's Peter, confronts them, says, what's this? This partial gift. And they lie about it. Actually, the husband lies about it first, and then the wife comes back later, and they lie to the disciples. And then when they walk out of the building, they drop dead.
Love those stories.
Right. So, you know, the expectation seems to be different than 10% there, but that's more about honesty.
Yeah.
You know, honesty in our discipleship. So, if we're growing in our giving, that's the point. And, you know, in our zip codes, if everybody was doing that, the budget would never be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I feel like my role as a pastor is to just talk about the expectations that the tradition and scripture, I think, pretty clearly lay out, and then trust everybody to do that work on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. We're never going to force people. Like, we're not going to say, hey, you need to bring your pay stubs and your tax return. I mean, some churches do that.
That's true.
Where they're like, we need to see proof of what.
Yes. I don't think that's healthy.
That's not healthy. But I've always taught, like, whatever is, you know, if you feel a little bit of a sacrifice, a little bit of a tug, that's probably a good place to be. Mm-hmm. Because it should not be super easy. I think there should be a, like, okay.
Right. Right. I mean, so the stereotype of this, think pre-pandemic, is if when the plate comes by, you open up your wallet, you got a 20 and a 5, you throw the 5 in the plate. Yeah. That's not really what we're talking about when we're talking about stewardship. There's a guy named Jim Griffiths, I think it's Griffiths with an S. He's a church planting coach. And many years ago, I went through this kind of boot camp that we have for church planters called the New Church Leadership Institute. And Jim, his persona is, it's a little big. Some might say obnoxious a little bit, like he's very direct.
Okay.
And his distinction is between a tipper and a tither. Tithing is an intentional thing that we do where we sit down and reflect on our budget and where we are versus where we think we should be. And we're growing in that area of our discipleship. Tipping is, I'll give you the couple bucks that I've got in my wallet, which is not, that's not what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
You're not giving so you can keep the lights on at the church, although that is a consequence of your giving. Right. You're giving because that's an important part of the way that you are managing what God has entrusted to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But would you give encouragement to people that every gift matters?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, wherever people are, it's about where your heart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if this year $1,000 gift over the course of the year
mm-hmm.
is what you feel like you can do in the context of your family's budget, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Do that intentionally, understanding that you are giving back to God what God has entrusted to you.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
And next year, grow in that, you know, that's the goal for all of us.
Yeah. I think we just all need to start somewhere. And so, yeah, I, I just encourage people, like, whether it is like, I'm going to start with 20. Okay, start with 20. Let's start somewhere.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Okay. So in general, what you've kind of said this, but what do you think you would say to the congregation? What's your hope for their hearts and giving overall? You've probably already said that.
But. Yeah, no, I just think that it's, I think it depends on where everybody's starting place is. But the first thing that I always want to clarify is that stewardship is not about the church budget. It is not. It is not about that. The church budget is a consequence of our stewardship, but that is not the point. The point is that we're clear that we are, that everything that we have, we are holding in trust for the God to who's given it to us. What our talents, our time, our witness in the world, and certainly our money. And if we're intentional about what we plan to give back to God, then that's what we're called to do. And so the stewardship campaign is not about fundraising. The stewardship campaign is an opportunity for everybody to check in with this really foundational spiritual practice.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. I do think when you kind of get more comfortable with giving, I think there's just such incredible freedom, and there's such a domino effect of that. Yeah, you want to give your talent to, like, there's just so much, like, right. You can really be released or unleashed to do
right.
Great things when you can live into that
right.
giving. So
right, and I like to say that 10% is the goal. That's the biblical goal. Everybody's in a different place. The only number that's probably not okay, except in some very rare circumstances, mm-hmm. would be zero. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's exactly what you were saying. Start where you can and then grow from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Okay. So Chris, we're wrapping it up today, but we'll be back next Tuesday talking about serving.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I should say that next week we're going to have a guest co-host with you.
Okay.
Reverend Stephanie Reed Meyer, who is preaching a table of grace on the same subjects. Mm-hmm. We'll be in a conversation with you about serving others. Looking forward to hearing that. Yeah. In the meantime, y'all, thank you for joining us on Off Script. It is great to spend some time with you every week. We will see you next week. God bless.